Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
And welcome back. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Fortress Wealth Management Insurance Services in Ames. Call Tim Hibbing at 515-290-9000 for all your insurance needs. And here we got another action pack. Brian loves it when I say that. Action packed week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
It's thrill packed. It's not thrill action packed.
Well, yeah, because you were going to like do
it'll
cage wrestling in the middle.
Listen, it'll be action packed when we're at a television show. Then it'll be action packed.
Okay.
For the moment,
that's
thrill packed.
Okay. I didn't realize TV shows are action packed, radio programs are thrill packed. Okay. I think I understand. So we got a big weekend, Iowa Freedom Summit.
Yeah, I understand you shall be going to that.
Yes, I will be. And you'll be enjoying your grandchildren.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have fun. I probably won't get much sleep. But I'm going to
probably
have,
not. Probably
but I'm going to have fun.
And you know, as far as what the big news with the Super Bowl coming up is the New England Patriots.
My question, and we can perhaps ask our guest this, but my question is, when will the congressional hearings on underinflated footballs begin?
Absolutely. And with that segue, we have U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley on the line with us. Senator?
Good morning.
Any plans?
Good morning, and you talk about underinflated footballs. I'll tell you, it was a discussion in the Republican caucus when an Indiana senator stood up and says they're going to take it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Oh, wow.
No, you did did not say that.
Well, he said that. Of course, it was tongue-in-cheek, but he made a serious statement before we came to the conclusion of what he was saying.
Oh, wow.
Oh boy!
But I could just see it now because you know things are always better when we have hearings, right?
I always say that particularly in my oversight work, which is a constitutional role of Congress, besides passing laws to make sure the president carries them out.
Mm-hmm.
I always say a hearing as part of oversight ought to be the last thing because you put so much labor and time into it that if you can get to the bottom of an investigation through letters and phone calls and news conferences,
mm-hmm.
it's a whole lot more efficient. But yes, hearings are a very useful tool, and particularly they're a useful tool when you're stonewalled by the administration.
Yeah, that is very true. Speaking of the administration, on Tuesday you had the chance to listen to President Obama's sixth State of the Union address. Were you impressed?
No.
In a word?
when I say was I impressed, that doesn't express lack of respect for the presidency.
Right.
But this president has a very liberal agenda. He thumbs his nose at the Constitution when he uses executive orders and presidential edicts, and now there's a new term, memoranda, but it all adds up to this president using his pen and phone
mm-hmm.
in a way that abrogates the constitutional responsibility of the legislature to legislate. And when you have the constitutional responsibility to legislate, that also includes not legislating if you think something should not be done. And so when the president thinks something should be done and the Congress doesn't do it or do it the way he wants it done, that doesn't give him the constitutional right to do whatever he wants to do in
Absolutely.
That same line of business. So that's when I say I didn't like the speech because it was along the same liberal agenda of more taxes, more spending, more government regulation, and just a more dominant role
mm-hmm.
Of government in the lives of Americans, whereas the principle of the Declaration of Independence that that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is something that we get from God,
absolutely,
not from the government. And government becomes more massive, then it's contrary to that principle, and then contrary to the Declaration of Independence principles spelled out in the Constitution,
mm-hmm,
particularly in the 10th Amendment, where it says that power is not specifically given to the federal government, are reserved to the states and the people thereof. So we have the principle of limited government, and it seems to me that the president's actions and attitude and philosophy and ideology is contravening that constitutional principle.
Yeah. If I were to sum up President Obama's speech in two words, I'd say free and fair. It seems like he wants to give away the farm to everybody, like free community college. I understand wanting to help students reduce debt load, but we can't afford free community college. And I know he lifted...
That doesn't stop these guys, though. The fact that we can't afford something's meaningless to some of these guys.
Very true. So, for instance, I want to ask you, when you hear the term middle-class economy, what do you think of? What comes to mind?
Well, first of all, you'd be surprised the high percentage of people in the United States consider themselves middle class.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the 1% versus 99, which you want to think are the downtrodden. The middle class gets I saw an extremely high percentage, and I don't know whether it's 80, probably not more than 90,
mm-hmm,
but a high percentage of people consider themselves middle class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like to use the word middle class, although sometimes I do. But I like to think in terms of hardworking taxpayers.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And what do you think President Obama was describing? What I mean, middle class to him is what? In your response, in your prepared statement on your website, I saw that you said that his speech was full of winners and losers. Who in your mind wins and who loses?
Well, from his standpoint, the only people win in America are the upper 1%.
Hmm.
And his philosophy is that if you're going to help the middle class, you ought to tax the 1% more. But the trouble is you can't tax the 1% more to do all that he wants done.
Right.
So eventually it hits the so-called middle class. Because you can't raise taxes high enough to satisfy the appetite of Congress to spend money or the president to spend money.
That's exactly right.
And so if you're going to be more conservative, it's spending less. We don't have a taxing problem. We got a spending problem.
Absolutely.
And we don't need higher tax rates. We need more taxpayers. And that's where his program has come up short.
Mm-hmm.
The participation rate of people working at 62.7% is as low as it was going way back to 1978. We reached a point here in the last 15 years under Clinton and Bush where we had about a 66 or 67% participation rate. And if we had the same participation rate that we had in the last years of the Bush administration, or maybe even going back to the Clinton administration, we'd probably have 9, 10, or 11 million more people employed. And the reason the unemployment rate's gone down from 10% to now 5.6 or 5.7
mm-hmm.
is because people have dropped out of the labor force. But there's one other aspect about his intention of improving the middle class. You know, if you could take from the wealthy people and spread money out among everybody in the middle class, that'd be one thing. But government can't do that. So what he wants to do is have government make a determination of where it goes, and then you get political decisions.
Mm-hmm.
whereas I think most people would believe that a market decision, or let me put it another way, if you tax more, bring it in here, 535 people in Congress and the mm-hmm. president are going to make a determination where it's spent, and that's going to have political implications in that decision making, which are kind of selfish in some respect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is it better to take the money and let 535 people decide how to spend it, or is it better to leave it in the pockets of Americans and have 137 million different taxpayers determine whether to spend it or save it, mm-hmm. and if you're going to save it, how you're going to save it,
right.
and if you're going to spend it, how you spend it? The political advantage of the latter is that it turns over in the economy many more times
right.
than if 535 members of Congress decide how to divide it up.
And I would definitely go with option B there. You're listening to
Absolutely.
Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and we have on the line U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley. Senator Grassley, what did you think about President Obama's veto threat on Iran sanctions?
First of all, the best thing to tell you is if I get a chance to vote on stronger Iran sanctions, I'm going to vote for it. So obviously, I think he shouldn't veto it.
Mm-hmm.
And we also got whatever I vote for, I hope it's not the latest version that's come out, which has been modified by Democrats who support the bill mm-hmm. of stronger sanctions. It's got so many caveats on it that the president can delay or ignore under certain conditions, pretty general, so he'll be able to do almost he wants to. It's hardly worth our passing that piece of legislation. I'm thinking about sending a clear signal to the Iranians that you negotiate in good faith, and if you don't, we're going to reimpose sanctions. The problem is we have delayed or reduced sanctions to some extent while negotiations are going on. And a large share of that additional income to the Iranian economy and the government ends up in Syria mm-hmm. helping fight the civil war there. So we've given them almost a clean hand to do what they want to with more income from less sanctions. And number two, time to continue developing a nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
And it's a case of where they've hardly moved. And let's say I stretch my hands out here and there's 3 or 4 feet between my two hands, and the right hand is Iran's position before negotiations started.
Mm-hmm.
That right hand stays about where it is, and you see the left hand, which is the American position in negotiation, it's moved way much closer to the Iranians. They've hardly
right.
moved. So we just sucker to give and give and give. And this isn't a problem just with this administration. This started back in the Bush administration to some extent. Not that Bush misnegotiated, but he kind of turned everything over to the Germans and the French and the British to negotiate.
Right.
And they gave in to the Iranians. Not holding them to their promises. Little bit the same mistake we've made with North Korea.
Well, Senator Grassley, can you tell us what it is that's driving the Democrats or anybody else for the matter of that to be reluctant to be a little firmer with the Iranians? What's the bottom line there?
Okay. Well, it's more process than it is substance. And that process is that when State Department personnel, and not just the Secretary of State, but mm-hmm. the diplomats, when you start negotiations, you've got to get an agreement or you fail,
mm-hmm.
rather than getting a negotiation that's failure. Any sort of negotiation and things you get on paper, it just turns out to be a success regardless of how harm it's done to the American foreign policy. So it's an attitude that's at the problem here as much as the substance of what you're negotiating.
Wait, but you're saying we actually have a foreign policy? Because I haven't been able to see much of one out of the Obama administration.
We got a foreign policy of retreating from the 70 years of American leadership that has basically prevented World War III.
Great. And we have just a couple minutes left, so a quick question. How is it being, what's it like being the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee now, just being just a farmer?
Well, I'm still a farmer.
Yeah, okay. Glad to hear that.
Chairman of the Judiciary Committee, the first one in the history of the Judiciary Committee or in the history of our country since we've had a Judiciary Committee. And I relish the opportunity, not because I'm a farmer, not because I'm a non-lawyer, but when you're chairman of a committee, any committee, but particularly in a committee I've served on my entire 35 years in the United States Senate, it's a position of leadership. You get to set the agenda. So in a whole myriad of things that are conservative, bipartisan, bilateral, bicameral, whatever the case might be, it gives you a chance to play a more important role.
Well, congratulations, Senator. We're glad to have you in that spot, even if you are just a farmer. You know, and we appreciate your work on the Senate and everything you've done on Fast and Furious and everything you will do in the future. Thank you so much for coming on with us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and we'll be back.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. You've heard me talk about how Tim Hibbing of Fortress Wealth Management got my business insured when no one else could. But Tim also insured my home and my family's automobiles. And just the other day, Tim told me that he had a 3-week stretch where he saved 3 different local families $1,000 per year or more on their insurance. And he said this is not an uncommon thing. So naturally, I said, sign me up for that. Tim Hibbing is a young man who grew up in Ames, who went to Iowa State, and has been in the insurance business for nearly 10 years. He's low-key and no pressure. To get a quote, call him or even text him at 515-290-9000. That's 515-290-9000. Call or text Tim Hibbing of Fortress Wealth Management. That's 515-290-9000. Tim Hibbing of Fortress Wealth Management.
You're pretty sure you know why he treated you that way, or do you? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Assuming the motives and interests of others is a great way to fan the flames in a conflict. Such bias tends to impact our words, attitudes, and actions. But what if you spent more time and energy really trying to understand the potential interests this person has? Try giving him the benefit of the doubt and look for wholesome or at least neutral motives. Seeking to understand another person allows you to approach him with a spirit of gentleness that God commands in Galatians 6:1. You who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. The next time you are in a conflict, employ the peacemaker pause principle. The letter U is for understand the other party's interests. If you are confused about another person's motives, call 515-635-5465 to set up a free consultation or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org. Again, that number is 515-635-5465.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We enjoy coming to you every week. Not an action-packed show, but this is a thrill-packed show, as Brian would say.
Much better. Much better.
Much better. Okay, I have to use the right terminology. If we were a TV show, then it would be action-packed. But since we're not, it's only thrill-packed. But we have a great guest on the line. His name is Blake Purcell, and he is the field director for Slavic Reformation Society. He is an ordained minister with the Presbyterian Church in is it in America or of America?
In America.
In America.
Okay.
He has ministered in St. Petersburg, Russia, to Russians and Russian-speaking people including Russian-speaking Muslim countries like
Kazakhstan.
Thank you. I can't say big words today. For 25 years, and he was actually started serving over in Russia while it was still the Soviet Union, which that just intrigues me.
Pretty incredible,
Blake. What in the world? I guess you have to have a special calling for the Lord to say, I'm going to go into the Soviet Union. I know, was it post-fall, post-Berlin?
Went there before the wall fell, and then the Lord actually roped us in by having the wall fall. I thought I was going to get let off the hook, but it didn't happen that way.
Okay. So you thought this was going to be probably more of a short-term thing, but 25 years later, you're still... Are you going? Are you just here for furlough? Are you going back, or are you retiring?
No, I just was here. We have six children, and five of them are out of the home. So I was here actually in the United States for my mother's 80th birthday, and so I brought my wife and daughter over. But because we have a school in St. Petersburg, Russia, that they are a part of, they had to go back. So I've been here 3 weeks or so on my own, and I go back in about another 2 weeks.
Great. So as field director for Slavic Reformation Society, first of all, what is Slavic Reformation Society, and then what do you do for them?
Right. The Slavic Reformation Society is really a partnership between, we've had up to 70 churches throughout the United States and Canada supporting us. It's a partnership between believers in the United States and Russian-speaking people in the former Soviet Union. Essentially through our seminary there, where we have been training pastors in our seminary since 1999, and we now have 13 churches in our movement across 9 time zones in 5 countries. So it's a partnership between those pastors and those churches and American churches and American believers. That's what the Slavic Reformation Society is.
Great. So, and it also has a church planting component. How many churches have you planted through this?
Right. So I like I just said, it's we have, you know, in our circle, like any seminary, we're in contact with about 20 churches throughout the former Soviet Union. But those that really want to be a part in a more formal way of what we're doing are 13.
Okay.
So we're in 2 countries of the stands that are mostly Muslim. And we have 4 churches in there. In fact, I just got back from one of those. I won't name the particular country, but there's 5 down there. There's Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Kyrgyzstan, and one other. Mm-hmm. I usually can name 4, but there's 5. there's actually 5. And they're mostly Muslim. I just got back. Halfway through the conference we were hosting down there, I found out that they had made a new law in May, which said that any Christian meeting in that country would be considered an act of terrorism. So,
oh, wow.
So we're halfway through the conference and we found out we were officially legally terrorists. But we have 3 courageous men that we're training in that country, and their second language is Russian, so that's why we're able to minister with them and to them. But they're planning in the 90s was an era of good feeling in those places, so it was not against the law for missionaries to come in.
Right.
And they're the fruit of Korean Presbyterians that got in there. And then all the missionaries were kicked out about 3 or 4 years ago. So since then, there are more and more laws against freedom of religion and against the church and against the any kind of evangelism. So... anyway, we're in the stands, so in the Muslim world, and then we have a church in Latvia, which is on the Baltic Sea by Poland and Germany, and then a Russian-speaking church, and then we have churches in Moscow, St. Petersburg, and then in the Far East, in Siberia, in the middle of Russia, and we have 2 in the Far East over there by Japan, so that's why we cover 9 time zones.
Wow. Wow, that's
9 times.
Keeps you busy.
Wow.
just a little busy. So when you first went over to the Soviet Union, what was that like?
Right. When I said the Lord wrote me in, it was a little more literal. I mean, literally, that's what God did. The I was with the Navigators at the time, a wonderful organization, and they and Campus Crusade in the 70s and maybe the late 60s began traveling secretly behind the Iron Curtain. And I was an Army officer, had gotten out of the Army. We trained to fight the Russians, but also we were getting reports on the suffering in communist prison camps and gulags. So we were praying, the Christians in the Army were praying for the suffering believers behind the Iron Curtain, but at the same time, of course, I was an Army officer, so we were fighting, mm-hmm. training to fight them.
Right.
But after I got out of the Army, I was in the ministry at Texas A&M when I got a postcard in the mail which said, would you like to take some students from Texas A&M to do evangelism behind the Iron Curtain? And we did it in 89, and it was a wonderful ministry experience. Lots of people interested in Christ. We got to share the faith with many folks in Leningrad and Moscow, but being there was torturous. There was no food in the stores. You had to bully your way into any restaurant or cafeteria to eat. The infrastructure had caved in. People were very rude to each other. So the border guards were arrogant and threatening. So when the plane left Moscow in 1989, I bent over. Once we got up to altitude, I unbuckled, went to one of the students, and I said, you won't believe this. There are actually navigators that want to live in the Soviet Union as missionaries. I said, I could never do that. And I was absolutely serious.
Yeah.
So, lo and behold, November comes around, which was what? That was, I went there, I think, in June or July of 89. November comes around, and all the countries in Eastern Europe started. Well, the Berlin Wall fell, and then all the countries had these counter-revolutions, whether it became semi-democratic or democratic. And on December 25th, Christmas Day, 1989, the Lord basically, in one of these moments, I've only had a couple of them in my life. One was when I came to Christ in 74. But the Lord just basically said something very simple like, I want you to move east.
Mm.
And I didn't know if that meant Bulgaria or what?
Maybe
but,
Georgia?
Yeah, Georgia. Yeah.
The state of Georgia, yeah.
Right. Anyway, so I had no idea what the God was doing, but I think looking back on it, it's exactly where God wanted me to be, because I was telling God the whole time, I cannot do this. I will have a nervous breakdown.
Mm.
When we finally did move there and the police would pull you over. We had one of the only big American cars in town. We had a big red Suburban, believe it or not. And so from 90 to 95, actually in about 2 years there, I counted, I was pulled over by the police 200 times.
Wow.
Of course, a big red Suburban wouldn't attract any attention at all.
No. No, of course not. Of course not. And the police would pull me over and then want to say that sometimes they pull me over and say they just want to look inside the car, you know?
Nice.
So, anyway, when they would want bribes, you know, I would kind of panic and, not that they were going to arrest me or something, but just the American sense of justice, you know, they would pull you over and all they want you to just pay in order to be let loose.
Yeah.
So they would extort money from you. So that I knew that was going to happen, and that's why I said to the Lord, you know, I'll either get in big trouble from, you know, calling policemen names or something, or yelling at them to live up to moral standards, or I'll just have a nervous breakdown.
Right.
So all along I was saying, Lord, I can't do this. Lord, I can't do this. And all along the Lord was going, I know you can't. In your own strength, you can't do it. Just take one little step at a time. So for the first 10 years, we said, well, we can do this a year. You know, we can do it a year. Okay, a year. And, you know, horrible things would happen along the way. God kept blessing the ministry, kept growing the ministry, but at the same time, it was very difficult to live there. And lo and behold, after 10 years, we thought, you know what, we've been here a long time, and we've been taking it 1 year at a time. So,
mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's how we got there, and that's what it was basically like.
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Blake Purcell, who's with the Slavic Reformation Society. Blake, what... From your earliest moments in Soviet Union, what has the country kind of transformed into?
Right. Unfortunately, it seems to have turned back, since January when Russia invaded Crimea, and then basically annexed or stole the Crimea from the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
It's going back to viewing themselves as enemies of Europe. But in the 1990s, everything had fallen apart, and they had a very open and good attitude toward the West. Especially when I first got there, we opened up our living room to have college students come study the Bible in our living room, and lo and behold, they began to come to Christ, and that group became a church, and the church founded the seminary, and the seminary now is why we have 13 churches across 9 time zones. So
wow.
The Lord really used that. And during the 90s, when they had chaos in the country, they really were open to, you know, had a good attitude toward, you could say, Protestantism, evangelicalism, pretty good attitude. Now they've gotten more organized, and unfortunately mm-hmm. there's anti-American, anti-European propaganda day and night.
Right. So is evangelical Christianity looked at as Western then?
Oh, totally, yeah. So the men, the first 14 men in seminary, 7 of them were former convicts and came to Christ in prison. So the only place where it seemingly men were really open to the Lord was places where they had been crushed, you know.
Yeah.
So in the general rule, the populace feels that they have true Christianity in their national church. The national church, as a rule, does not teach the Bible, does not preach the historic Christ from the Scriptures, and therefore they are sort of inoculated. They feel they have, they don't go to church, most of them, but they've been baptized into the national church, and so they feel they have Christ, even though they don't know anything about Him and don't know any Scripture, and there's no cultural transforming power in that situation. It's basically, you know, ritualistic, and that's it. So that's why, you know, they still have lots of moral problems. I mean, they have believe it or not, 44% of all conceptions in Russia end in abortion.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. And so they're the, percentage-wise, they're the highest percent per capita of abortions in the world. And, that, you know, then you can just trickle it on down. If you're going to have that kind of a value system, then lots of other things will go easily. So total corruption of government officials and, you know, almost total corruption of government officials.
Yeah.
So,
but I take it, though, that you still see the Holy Spirit at work in Russia.
Yeah, the worse, you know, this past year, the worse the political situation got, the more our ministry was growing. So we ended up with 7 new pastors at this last pastor's intensive course, which opened up more churches that we were going to be helping and establishing in the Muslim world. So as bad as it's gotten, I've just seen it very regularly. When the enemy and evil begins to grow, God begins to bless the ministry more than ever.
Right.
So, yeah, our ministry is flourishing, both in St. Petersburg and then throughout the 5 countries where our churches are being planted.
Fantastic.
More than ever. So, yeah.
We very
much so that way.
Yeah, we're almost out of time, so I want to just encourage people to visit SlavicReformationSociety.com. And also, Blake is going to be preaching at Christ the Redeemer Church this Sunday at 9:30 a.m. in Pella, and also be speaking at Ebenezer Reformed Church in Lytton, which is just southeast of Pella, at 6 p.m. So I'd encourage our listeners to go check them out, SlavicReformationSociety.com. Thanks, Blake.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Blake, for being on the show.
You bet. Thank you all.
This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for caffeinated thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, and welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart, Brian Myers, and Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries. Check out crosswalkcounseling.org and contact Scott Owen at 515-292-7141. He offers biblical counseling and conciliation. So check him out and tell him you heard about him at Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Well, this segment, as always, typically we talk, just do a news rundown. News
that you can hopefully use.
Yeah, absolutely. And here we heard there's a big powwow going on between former Florida Governor Jeb Bush and 2012 Republican nominee, presidential nominee, Mitt Romney.
Romney, he sucks! Hey!
They're scheduled to meet privately. This is probably, his powwow has probably already happened, but to meet in Utah to raise the possibility that the two former governors will find a way to avoid competing presidential campaigns that would split the Republican establishment next year. Two prominent party members said Wednesday night, according to the New York Times. And I say, no, please. I want the Republican establishment split. And Chris Christie get in. And who else could get in? That would be, I'm trying to think. Who else would
they fit that bill?
Yeah, fit that bill. Whoever else. If you're a moderate squish, please run for president.
Romney, Bush, Christie. Yeah, I don't know who's left.
Yeah, I mean, those are the big three.
Yeah.
So,
but it is interesting.
Yeah, well,
these guys.
No, I was going to say, I could say something about Crispy. Crispy. Christie.
Oh, well, anyway.
Never mind. We're devolving. Moving on.
Hey, at least these guys have the colossal good sense to get together and talk about this. Okay,
politically speaking, they know they're gonna pretty much, both of them are in. That's gonna, so you know, possibly
we need some on our side, if you will,
yeah,
that would have these same kinds of discussions.
Put pride aside, and you know what? Here's the thing. I don't mind a crowded field initially, but if it continues to stay crowded until the Iowa caucus, we've got a problem.
Yeah. It creates more problems than it solves.
And I think by time you hit, almost the time you hit caucus, you kind of have an idea how your presidential campaign is going to go. Now, last year was an exception. Rick Santorum peaked early. I'd rather see something more like 2008, where we started to see some candidates drop out, and suddenly that allowed conservatives to coalesce. But it was based off of that candidate having increased momentum and increasing presence in the polls and whatnot. And that's not a plug for Mike Huckabee, nor is it a plug for Rick Santorum. I've told a couple reporters that asked me where I'm at with 2016. I am undecided, baby. I am a clean slate. I'm going to wait. I'm not one that, I've never been one to jump into and support a presidential campaign a year and a half out. I think that's insane when people do that. I want to see who's actually going to run, and then I want to get to know them, and then I'll make my decision. So, and we'll be doing that. Caffeine Thoughts will be offering an endorsement. But moving along, we got other stories to talk about.
Well, we've had a vote that this week to coincide with the annual March for Life.
Kind of a late term pain capable abortion act, where basically was going to cut off, ban abortions post 20 weeks, I believe, right?
I believe so. And this was to coincide with marking the anniversary of the 1973 Roe versus Wade decision.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there was quite a what would you call it, a kerfluffle amongst House Republicans.
Yeah, this is Speaker Boehner's got a little egg on his face because I know that was something he was probably hoping was going to be smooth sailing. Not that we've never had that happen in Iowa on an abortion bill in the Iowa House,
right.
We have.
Right.
But this was different. This was the more moderate wing kind of sabotaging it rather than you know, the personhood only folks sabotaging it. Even though it sounds like both groups did not like this bill.
Well, and the frustrating thing was that apparently in the original bill, the one that was unpalatable mm-hmm. for apparently a number of these folks, this still had a rape exception in it, but it demanded that the rape victim had to have reported the act to the police.
Right.
And that was, for some reason, that was a deal killer.
Right.
For some of these other folks, which the whole thing is extraordinarily disappointing.
And I think for a lot of pro-life people, it's a deal killer anyway, because
right.
Even more of your non-personhood groups, you know, non-personhood only groups, because I think all pro-life groups are for personhood.
Right.
They don't believe in exceptions. I know Iowa Right to Life will not support bills that have a rape exception, an incest exception, because why? Because why would we want to place a death penalty on and victimize an innocent party in a horrible crime? We don't punish children for the sins of their father.
Yeah, that's the problem. If you put these exceptions like that in, you don't understand the life issue.
Right.
That's really right. The bottom line. So it's another disappointment.
I mean, is it hard for a woman that goes through that? Certainly, does the Republican Party and pro-life people need to be able to address that topic better? Absolutely. We don't need, you know, more Todd Akins
right.
stepping in it with that particular topic. But that's not something we can allow to continue in bills. But it's sad that this was a deal killer for moderate because they thought it was too, you know.
Yeah, it was already a bill that didn't go far enough. And,
right.
and as it was unacceptable to a number of the folks in the Republican caucus of the House.
Right.
That's what's extremely disappointing.
Right. And Renee Elmers is Congresswoman Renee Elmers of North Carolina. She's got a lot of splaining to do. And I would not be surprised if this earns her a contested primary.
Okay, and the next one on the list, we have a highly publicized physician-assisted suicide of 29-year-old brain cancer patient Brittany Maynard, which we talked about
right.
on the radio here a while back. This apparently has moved forward across the country, the movement, for assisted suicide.
Right, and you know, maybe I think a better description for these types of bills would probably be more physician-prescribed suicides, because technically, well, in Oregon, they could actually, I think they could administer the medicine, but I know there's a bill in Iowa right now, House File, let's see, 65, that was basically filed by eight, very liberal Democrats in the Iowa House, and it does not allow the physician to actually administer the medicine, but that's technicality, really. I mean, if you're prescribing it and you're giving it to the person, I think you're violating your Hippocratic oath just as much as if you gave the medicine to them yourself.
Well, apparently there's another 12 states that are going to be following with similar legislation to the 1994 law passed in Oregon. I mean, I don't know that it's all going to go anywhere anytime soon,
probably,
but eventually,
in Iowa, okay, we know it's not going to pass, but we're going to desensitize the vote, the electorate. We're going to desensitize lawmakers. We're going to keep bringing it up year after year after year after year. And conservatives, actually, we were talking about this before the show. Conservatives need to learn this. This
right.
is why we need to continue to bring up bills year after year after
Chip
year,
away.
Even if we're
Chip
not
away.
in an environment like we are in Iowa with the Democrat House and a Republican House. Sometimes we get a little confused there with a Republican House and a Democrat Senate, where it's impossible to really pass anything like this. But it doesn't matter, because it sends a message and it continues to, you know, we need to keep bringing it up. Liberals are very good at doing this. Conservatives are not.
Right. And unfortunately, I do believe that you're going to continue to see this movement, go forward. And like we say, we've got a dozen states that are going to entertain this legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the way things are going, you will see a number of these states that will indeed pass this eventually.
Right. And, to any Iowa legislator that might be listening, just remember the petition from Choices and Compassion and Choices, they're just adding names. They're not necessarily collecting people's support the bill. Anyway, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
You're pretty sure you know why he treated you that way, or do you? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Assuming the motives and interests of others is a great way to fan the flames in a conflict. Such bias tends to impact our words, attitudes, and actions. But what if you spent more time and energy really trying to understand the potential interests this person has? Try giving him the benefit of the doubt and look for wholesome or at least neutral motives. Seeking to understand another person allows you to approach him with a spirit of gentleness that God commands in Galatians 6:1. You who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. The next time you are in a conflict, employ the peacemaker pause principle. The letter U is for understand the other party's interests. If you are confused about another person's motives, call 515-635-5465 to set up a free consultation or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org. Again, that number is 515-635-5465.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website, conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint, without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029. He can help you find the life insurance that you need. And I just wanted to talk briefly about what I just kind of threw in there right at our last segment. Compassion and Choices have been caught. We had an article on CaffeinatedThoughts.com about an Iowa woman who basically caught them adding her name to a petition when she never signed a petition.
Right.
So that's what I mean when I say if there's any petition that comes down from that group, don't trust it. Because they're just she signed a card for Brittany Maynard because she had literally had compassion for Brittany, and I totally understand. It was an awful situation, and I couldn't imagine being faced with a terminal illness like that. So, but that group was using that for their own benefit, and they were adding the name to the mailing list and to their petition, which is absolutely wrong and deceptive.
Okay, and now we've come to my favorite part of the show. You know this story must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up!
Okay. Authorities in Australia said an 18-year-old man who tried to sneak into a nightclub after being ejected had to be rescued from an air vent. Southport Magistrates Court heard Hugh McMahon, 18, an Irish citizen in Australia, on a one-year work visa, was ejected from the Sin City nightclub in Surfer's Paradise when he was found sleeping on one of the club's couches. So the court heard McMahon somehow got back into the club and was thrown out a second time, leading him to attempt to get into the club a third time by climbing from a neighboring apartment to the building's roof. Police were called just after 1 a.m. when clubgoers heard McMahon calling from the air vent, calling for help, where he'd gotten stuck. And Magistrate Ron Kilner said this, "Drunk or sober, it is a remarkably stupid thing you've done."
And that, I think we could all agree. Sin City must be a great club.
Oh, man, yeah. He's in there sleeping
or
on the couch.
Or the couch is really, really comfortable.
McMahon was fined $900 and ordered to pay $1,200 in restitution for damage to the building's roof and for $500 for the rescue from emergency services personnel.
Well, that was definitely outrageous. I don't know if that tops last week, though.
No.
With having surgery on a goldfish.
Look, we may never get to that particular... The bar may never get set that high.
I like
high
it
again.
How you're going outside the United States for these types of stories, because we never do anything crazy like that here in the United States, right?
No, never.
Never have drunk people doing outrageous things in the States.
Well, listen, what you have to remember is that we are an equal opportunity finder of crazy and weird stuff.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just thinking of all the stereotypes when you say Irish in a bar. It's like, oh no.
Well, remember we had that one in Boston not that long ago where that guy fell out of the ceiling and he was buck naked. And he attacked somebody with a knife?
He wasn't Irish, though, was he?
Well, I don't know.
But it was in Boston. There's a good possibility. My apologies to any Irish listener. We love you guys.
Yeah.
So
sure.
Oh, man. Crazy. And... We're almost out of time, but...
I don't know how that happened. That never happens.
Yeah, no doubt. We always can talk and bloviate until we hear the music, but I'm just looking at... Oh, let's see here. Oh, the co-founder of the Newsboys said, "Now, I am an atheist."
Yeah.
Isn't that special?
Yeah.
That's very disappointing.
It's really disappointing.
Yeah, he... In quotes,
now, he's been out of the band for a long time, but still...
good. Well, and now we're out of time.
Okay. Our quote of the day is from Ravi Zacharias. "I am totally convinced the Christian faith is the most coherent worldview around."
Amen. This is Captain 8 Thoughts Radio. We'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody.